Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by SeatGeek. For all of your SeatGeek needs, let me tell you what I do in December as a New Jersey Devils fan. I go to hockey games. You know why I go to hockey games? Because Devil fans don't really mess around with October or November. We go in December. We go around stocking stuffer time. Mom and Dad putting little tickets in your stocking. Hockey tickets. Maybe some lottery tickets too. Scratch off games. You know, win that $2 or that free ticket. And you win another $2, maybe get yourself a Slurpee. But mostly hockey tickets. And if you want to get some hockey tickets, or really any kind of tickets to sports, concerts, whatever you want, you need to get yourself the SeatGeek app. And here's the best part about it, ladies and gentlemen of the Puck Soup audience. You can get a $20 rebate on tickets. What do you do? Here's what you do. Download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click a promo code. Enter the promo code S-O-U-P, that spells soup, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first ticket purchase. So here's what you do. Again, if you want something to stuff your old stocking, you get the free SeatGeek app, you go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code S-O-U-P, that spells soup, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the free SeatGeek app today, enter the promo code soup, and enjoy the show.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to a NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyszynski of Yahoo Sports Puck Daddy Blog.
I'm Dave Lozo of the 6-7 fantasy football team that has the most points in his league because fantasy football's stupid.
And you're in Puck Soup.
It's a dominant team, Greg, and I can't buy wins on a consistent basis.
My team is very much a submissive team. Yeah. That's for damn sure. Yes.
I mean,
it very much is.
My team's not a dominant team, so I feel like we would probably see each other at the club.
We definitely would. I think our teams would get along pretty well.
Yeah.
Now, it's fantasy football has not been my friend this year. I'm 3-9, and but the joy of fantasy football is that if you're 3-9, you still play it because all it does is it takes about, you know, 25 seconds out of your week to play. That's the reason that like my fantasy hockey team right now in the league. You're in that league too, right?
No, I'm not doing any fantasy hockey this year.
Okay, I'm in the Puck Daddy League, and you figure I would have gamed the system, so I would be doing well,
right.
Except for the fact that I had Jonathan Quick.
Like you, Leahy, and Lambert should be like original
yeah.
six teams that get like the advantages that all the other teams
it should,
don't get.
Yeah, it should have been like back in the day when. You know, the Canadian teams had provincial
yeah.
rights to players.
Right.
Like, I should have been able to really grab any player that I wanted.
How did Montreal win all those cups all those years? They were just a really good franchise.
Yeah, that's right. It had nothing to do with the fact
sure.
that, like, if your name was Guy Le Beavertail.
Right. Through another Rangers never got any of those games.
Yeah. That's why the... Yeah. Imagine if they still...
Eddie Jockman.
Imagine if they still did provincial players. Like, Mike Komisarek had to be an Islander. You know, like, Bobby Ryan had to play for, the Flyers, probably, because he's South Jersey.
That's actually not a bad premise for some content, actually.
A little content.
Shotgun. Called it. Too late. 30 teams. Well, now I got to draft. Now I got to draft
yeah,
600 players.
Luckily, it's never a case where you ever use this show to mine content, right? Like, your Brian Bickle fucking thing from the other
Which
week.
Literally just dawned on me while we were... I didn't even think about it until we started talking about it. But Matt Nieto. You know where Matt Nieto would go?
Where?
You know where Matt Nieto's
Where's
from.
Matt Nieto from?
Oh my God! You watch NBC at all?
Where's he from?
He's from somewhere in California. I can't remember where.
Thank you. Right. But I mean, this is actually just probably a way for us to get Austin Matthews out of Canada, right? Now that I think about it.
Oh yeah.
Oh shit! You know what? Fuck! This is a horrible fucking idea. I just realized how many fucking Leafs there's going to be. Like the Leafs would literally have the pick of the litter. Like every player that Don Cherry has ever been on TV and being like, "God, tell your buddy to come on," like they're going to have the rights to that player. That's like probably about 33% of the league is from Ontario.
Actually, yeah. Well, what would you do with like Nick Lidstrom and Timo Solani? What would you do with the Europeans and the Russians?
No, those are the players. Those are the only players that would be free agents. So basically,
this is like the opposite of Trump's world, where the immigrants can come in and do whatever they want. This is never going to fly in 2016.
Well, that's why I think the NHL needs to be a progressive leader. Like, I feel like if we allow the immigrants to come here and basically have their whatever job they want and be wherever they want to be, freely moving from state to state, I think that it would really, you know, be a beacon of hope for our friends from over the seas.
Yes.
But honestly, so, like, if you're from a North American city, you have to play in that city. Or if you're from a metropolitan area, you've got to play for that team.
Or, like, if you're from Sweden, like, if your town is, like, the blank of Sweden, like, the Toronto of Sweden, or, like, the Las Vegas of Sweden.
The Paris of Texas. So if you're, okay, North American players play in North American cities, European players are free agents. And I think the league would do really well, except for the fact that, you know, Florida ain't quite there yet as far as producing players. So that'd be a lot of Swedes.
Oh, so there'd be no more team in Florida? That's too bad.
All right, let's talk about that. As we do the show this week, I'm actually honeymooning soon, so we're doing the show a little bit earlier than usual this week. But we are, luckily, listen, by the time you hear this, Jack Capuano is probably going to be fired. So that'll happen because, like, you know, whenever we drop a show, shit happens, like, right afterwards. But the thing that did happen this week that we're able to talk about is the As the Panther Turns soap opera in Sunrise, as Gerard Gallant was fired by the Florida Panthers on Sunday and was found to be waiting outside to put all of his belongings in a taxi cab.
Just fucking awful. Just embarrassing for that fucking organization. So embarrassing.
Tom Rowe is the new head coach. Tom Rowe, it's funny how things work out sometimes, Lozo. Tom Rowe was hired to be the general manager when Dale Tallon was fired upstairs. And at the time, was much more qualified to be a hockey coach than to be a hockey general manager.
And now he fired
the GM. Well, okay, sorry, revise that.
Yeah.
He promoted the GM, who hired the coach that he just fired, so then he could become coach because he was more qualified to coach than be GM.
Here's what I know about the
world. And he was in A Few Good Men with Kevin Bacon.
The thing I know about the world is whenever you let a billionaire's son run an organization, it always works out great. Like, that's how you want to do business, is you want to have, for instance, like, let's say you're like a really wealthy you know, real estate mogul, and you do a lot of your work outside of Manhattan, and then you have a son. You really want to just give him a bunch of money to sort of, like, start a career in real estate. And, like, don't really give him any checks and balances.
Right.
Let him do whatever he wants.
Just do whatever he wants, yeah.
And, you know, maybe he'll run for election one day, whatever. And now we have... now that I'm talking this out loud, think about where America is and the Panthers are at this moment, where the Panthers spent years in turmoil. Just bad team. Bad, bad, bad team. Dale Tallon comes there. Dale Tallon's like Obama. Takes that team, slowly builds it, gets it going in the right direction.
Everybody remembers in law school when Obama lost those players to free agency because he didn't know how to work a fax machine.
Right. Chicago is like that law school he worked at, for sure. They had to get rid of him because he didn't file the bar exam in time or whatever.
File the bar exam!
That's lawyer talk, right? File the bar exam. And now, you know, here comes the new Vinny Viola to be like, Hey, cry me a river. I'm going to play a little of the world's smallest viola. Oh! And I'm going to change everything that was working so well in a span of, like Vinny Viola's first 100 days are going to be like Trump's first 100 days, where you're going to look back and be like, what did we do? We were going in such a great direction.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I guess Trump's not really an analytics guy. He's probably not good at math.
So here's the bottom line about it. Gallant gets fired. He was complaining about the personnel changes on the Panthers, losing Dmitry Kulikov, losing Eric Gudbranson, losing a lot of toughness and grit and sandpaper and size from that blue line. The new management group wanted to go with a more sleek and fast defense rather than a big bruising one.
See, they also went young. They also wanted a new young product. Like, wow, I've...
But here's the thing. Here's the thing, though. Like... Didn't we just get done praising the Pittsburgh Penguins for having a sleek, faster defense rather than one with guys like Eric Gudbranson back there? Like, when are we going to make up our minds as a hockey world as to how we want teams built? Because, like, we praised the Subban trade, and then that didn't work all that well for Nashville yet. And then everybody's like, well, Shea Weber is a perfect guy for the Montreal team. And then everybody's crying a river over Gerard Gallant because he's like, I lost all this muscle off my blue line. Everybody's like, he's right. They fucked him. Like, at what point are we going to decide on what we want it to be? Because honestly, this crazy batshit ex-Army, whatever the fuck group that they have in Florida, is building the team how everybody in Twitter world wants the team to be built, aren't they?
Yeah, but I feel like Alain Vigneault is kind of like that as well, too. Like, he took a while to kind of like, the one thing Ranger fans always kill him on is how he deployed his guys. And, like, you know, he'd have Tanner Glass on his fourth line. He would just, you know, defense. Like, he was the same sort of way. Like, but he's a good coach, so you kind of afford him the Dan Girardi usage because he's good at everything else. And Gerard Gallant, I understand that maybe, like, he's like the Art Howe in the Moneyball movie where he doesn't want to use the lineup the way the GM wants to. But it's just weird to, like, punish him now when they've got a bunch of dudes underproducing, they've got a bunch of guys who are hurt, who are just not coming back. And, like, I'm sure he'll get over the way he was fired, but I don't know. I don't understand why you just don't can him in September.
I get what you're saying, but I think that speaks to one basic problem that I have with a lot of the coverage of Gallant being fired, which is that it's not at all about the performance of the team. Like, at all. Like, it's just not, right? Like, the performance of the team was middling at best, mm-hmm. but it's also a team that was missing Jonathan Huberdeau, getting nothing out of Jager, getting nothing out of Barkov, missing Jokinen, missing Bjugstad. The defense was different. The PDO had dropped. Like, as a
top 10 possession team.
Yeah, they are. You're absolutely right, which is sort of the weird thing about them being an analytic-driven thing, and yet as a possession team, they're still pretty good. It had nothing to do with performance. It had to do with a very simple sports thing. A guy paid a lot of money for a team. A guy who, lest we forget, had his son represent the team at the draft lottery.
Hey, yo, we're picking first over here.
Hey, we got Stugatz in the draft, Dad. I don't know what to tell you.
What a great name. That is a great name.
Eddie Viola. So nepotism and favoritism and cronyism, all the isms were present already. So buys the team, never hired the GM. The GM predated him. So the GM gets kicked upstairs. The GM who predated him not only hired Gerard Gallant, but then gave him an extension before Talon was removed from the general manager spot, right? So it has nothing to do with how they were doing on the ice. It has everything to do with I want my boy's vision, because it's not even Viola's vision, mind you. It's probably like all the guys in the organization that he's bought in from the outside. It's not about that. It's not about performance on the ice. It's like, I want my vision and my boy's vision represented, and Gerard Gallant is standing in opposition to that vision. So it's nothing to do with anything that's happened on the ice.
But it's just weird, though. Like, I understand that when, like, a new guy comes in and he wants to fire that guy and bring in his guy, but, like, it's weird to do it when you've had the most success as a franchise in, like, 20 years with the group and on the plan that was clearly working and they were clearly going in the right direction. And, I have no problem with trading, you know, Kulikov and Goranson and all that, but to, like, 20 games in, just... I also think part of it, too, is the fact that nobody goes to games there, so they probably feel like they need to have that, you know, sleek, fast, exciting team to get people in the building more, too. I think that plays into it a little bit. Even though they were winning last year, they come out this year and the building is still mostly empty. I think that puts pressure on them in a way that maybe people aren't appreciating. But first of all, also, by the way, this idea that he's going to go to Vegas is insane.
Like, yeah, he's not going to go to Vegas.
He's going to have his pick of jobs next offseason. Like, he's not going to Vegas. Why would he do that to himself?
I'm glad you brought that up about Gerard Gallant.
Gerard Gallant.
First of all, you know, the Jack Adams curse is alive and well as far as...
Yeah, but he's not the why there's a Jack... He's not a bad coach who just had a really good...
Hold on. He spent 3 years with the Columbus Blue Jackets. Okay, his last year there was 2006. Okay. He was hired in 2014 by the Florida Panthers to coach their team. Okay, so that's an 8-year spread. Fuck everyone in hockey who's whispering to their little Toronto insiders and being like, he's a really good man and a great coach, and God, boy, those Florida Panthers did him dirty. I'm like, you had 8 fucking years to hire this guy, and you didn't. And now all of a sudden he's like, you know, the bell of the fucking ball in your eyes because you saw a picture of him looking sad by a taxi cab. Fuck you. I gotta be honest with you, like right now. Like, I am in the aftermath of this decision to get rid of Gallant, and you know, at the time I'm like, wow, this is batshit. But the more I hear about it, and the more I read about it, the more I am a total mark for the Panthers to pull this off. It has nothing to do with them being now the lab rat for analytics, because that's the rap. I actually got asked on the radio today about that. They're like, do you think if the Panthers fail, that there's an indictment of analytics? No, you dumb shit. It has nothing to do with it.
Why do you do radio? I hate doing radio.
But it's true. It's true. Like, if the Coyotes fail and the Panthers fail, it's got jack and shit to do with analytics. It has everything to do with them being bad hockey teams. And analytics, you know what analytics does? It helps make bad hockey teams just a little bit better, but not all the way better. And you look at some of the moves that the Oilers have made, they got a little bit better. You look at some of the moves that some of these other teams have made, the Devils have made, they got a little bit better. But at the end of the day, it's not going to be the be-all and end-all as far as like whether you turn the corner. So that pisses me off. It's not about analytics. What makes me root for the Panthers to succeed here and get through this and pick the right coach after they kick Roe back upstairs and all that shit, what makes me hope that it works is I fucking hate the old boys club. I fucking hate it. I love the idea of a bunch of guys who don't have a hockey background, who have maybe an analytics background or a business background, coming in here and trying to, you know, reinvent the wheel a little bit. Try to do it a different way. This is a very personal thing for me. You know what I never did when I was growing up and it was a little cub reporter at a weekly newspaper, Dave?
Had sex. No.
Paid for dinner. Or insurance. No, the answer is that I never worked for the Washington Post. Everybody I knew was an intern at the Post.
Really?
And then wrote 6-inch game stories on Friday night for high school football, and then hoped and prayed that someone noticed they were kissing the right ass, and then they got a reporter job. I worked at the weekly paper, and I made a career out of it. It's not the path for everybody, but it's the path I took. I love the idea that the Florida Panthers have turned the keys over to people that have not paid their dues. I do. I hope that works. And the reason I hope it works is because I loathe all of these little hockey insiders taking to social media after this shit happened and parroting the words of their sources, being like, the entire hockey world is looking down on the Florida Panthers. Really? When the fuck aren't they looking down on the Florida Panthers? When is the last time the hockey world didn't look down on the Florida Panthers? They won the division? Even then they were like, it's an anomaly. With the Luongo trade, even then they were like, well, he had nowhere else to go. Like, you know, that's... I'm rooting for this team harder than I usually root for them because I hate the idea of these old white douches that constantly get these jobs being the ones that are in the right on this. Just like I rooted for Orrin Kulas and Len Barry and Brian Lawton in Tampa, even though that was a 5-ring circus, I'm rooting for these guys.
Okay, but just to go back, it's totally about analytics. I mean, that's 100% what it's about. It's about having a coach that doesn't buy into it the way the front office does, and so they brought down a guy to coach the team who will coach the team in the way the analytics guys
want. This is the
totally about analytics.
This is the quote from them. This is from Tom Rowe, the former GM that is now. I'm sorry. Well,
is it Tom Rowe, the guy that does all the dirty jobs?
He is.
And has the Chevy commercials.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like he once showed me what it was like to work at a bacteria farm. And now he's coaching a professional hockey team. It's pretty impressive.
He's like cutting Yager's mullet. This is a really hard job to trim this greasy thing after games. I'll show you.
He has a very deep voice. What happens now?
Well, now we climb inside of the shit tube, and the only way to clean the shit out of the shit tube is with our teeth.
Shrugs at the camera.
Pulls the brim of his hat down and just gets right in there. What a pitch that must have been for that reality TV show. What's the pitch? Well, I'm a rugged dude, and like guys want to be me and women like me, and I'm just going to roll around and shit for 30 minutes. Wait, really? Just shit every week. Sometimes just regular garbage, but mostly shit. And I'm also going to coach the Florida Panthers.
My biggest problem with Dirty Jobs is always that at no point did it ever seem like he didn't enjoy what he was doing. Like, that show would have been exponentially better with Carson Kressley from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Being just like some miserable, doesn't want to do it at all thing? Totally.
What's a gooey duck?
Did you ever watch that show where Dave Attell got drunk? Like, he stayed up.
Like, Insomniac?
Was it called Insomniac?
Yeah, it was called Insomniac.
Like, that was, like, that's, that, I don't know why. There's so many, every show I like on TV never lasts more than two seasons, but that was a great idea.
There's an entire subgenre of shows about guys getting loaded and just hanging out. Like, Bert Kreischer's show is like that.
What was that?
The Zane Lamprey show, who's, by the way, a hockey fan and probably a future guest of this very podcast.
Are these real people you're listening
to? Yeah, he's.
Zane Lamprey?
Yeah, he used to just go to bars and get tanked and, like, review the bars or whatever. I know, right?
But like they let Dave Attell like raise and lower a bridge while he was hammered. Like, I was just like, wait, why is this legal?
Wait, was he doing it on behalf of Chris Christie?
More politics on this show. That's right.
Everybody loves that. Tom Rose said today on Monday when they did this conference call.
Wait. Can I guess the quote? If you give me the topic of what the quote is about, I bet you I can guess what he said.
Go ahead.
I haven't read it.
Which changes will they implement first after Gerard Gallant was fired?
All right, what they're going to do? What they're going to do is, you know, they're going to assess everything. They're not going to rule anything out. They're going to see what works, and yeah, they're going to apply analytics to it. But they're not going to use analytics to make every single decision. But there are some changes that we're going to make, and it has really nothing to do with how Gerard Gallant did his job.
How dare you, sir?
No.
Yeah. You just decided that you were going to give the Trump campaign review of the changes, and I'm going to give you the Hillary campaign review, which is with specifics.
PanthersWars.net.
The first change, and I've already talked to the coaches this morning about it, is that we are really going to attack our defensive zone system. We've got to tweak that a little bit. We want to go more into of an area zone coverage type system. As far as the systems go, that's the only area that we're going to fix and talk about with the players tomorrow. That sounds kind of like a little bullshitty, right?
Like, he was like midway through the answer and he realized he was revealing too much and then was like, that's it.
It kind of sounds like when you're on a job interview and you're like, oh, well, how would you fix this process? Well, I mean, every process needs fixing at the end of the day.
There's many ways to fix a process. And that process, to fix something processing, is a very processed fix.
So, in summary, all in all, of mice and men is both of mice and men.
I mean, here in Florida, we have a lot of panthers. That Floridians enjoy panthering.
So, Tom, what are your plans on fixing this mess that Gerard left?
Well, you know, probably score a few more goals, keep a few more pucks out of our own net.
Yeah, you know, we're just looking to play better in all three zones.
Yeah. So that's what they're going to do. This is from Matthew Caldwell, who is the president and CEO of the Panthers.
Oh, this is going
to
be good.
As a management team in front office, we got together around the 20-game mark, and we just have been unhappy with the inconsistent performance.
And that was a game ago.
And we think that we can be playing better at this stage of the season. We decided a change was necessary to move in a different direction. It is the just giant shovels of bullshit in the sense that, like, again, Jonathan Huberdeau, your top-line offensive player, could you imagine, like, the Lightning firing John Cooper and being like, you know, even though we don't have Steven Stamkos, we should be doing a lot better than we are right now.
That was Florida's 22nd game.
Yeah.
That we right around the 20. You know what I want to do? Besides get really drunk and eat some quesadillas right about now? Oh, this NHL.com website sucks. They don't have the on this date thing anymore?
No, they don't. You mean where they were last year?
Yeah, I wanted to see where they were through 22 games last year.
No.
I feel like it wasn't much different. Like, they were better at this point last year.
They were a little better.
But, like, you're a quarter of the way through the season. Like, you brought in a bunch of new dudes. Like, you know how, like, when Don Sweeney took over, we were all just waiting for the moment when, like, Claude Julien got called in and it was going to be over. And, like, Claude Julien was like, well, you know what? I got a pretty good track record. People like me. The locker room likes me. And, hey, look, I'm going to get us to 95 points and miss the playoffs. But he still got into a pretty good season. Like, And seriously, I've waited outside. That's a bad place to get a cab because, like, the arena is not – it's not, like, in a downtown location where you just walk outside and, like, wave your hand.
Right.
Like, you do have to drag your bag to some – like, it sucks. Like, it's just – that's probably the worst place in the league to get fired if you're a visiting coach because you just have nowhere to – like, where did they go from there? Did they go back to Florida? Like, did he just – what did he do? They couldn't fire him back home?
Nope.
Like, that's...
I couldn't.
Like, that's... I mean, at the end of the day, you get fired, you get fired. But, like, that's a really Mickey Mouse way to get... Unless, like, after the game, like, he just blew up at Tom Rowe. He was just like, fuck this. You know, eat my that.
It makes me so angry to see these people being like, you know, like... And you got guys... You literally have guys that are working in television now because they were such shitty executives... coming down on this regime. Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, they're on television to talk about...
Right. Oh, sorry, God, you were talking. Sorry, I just got a cold. It's November. I get a little...
You literally have guys on television who are like, yeah, Jonesy, these guys in Florida are insane. By the way, how's that Luongo fella doing? Got a lot of longevity there, doesn't he? Not exactly injury prone, is he?
Maybe playing with Brian Campbell was a pretty good thing for our next part. Maybe that was a good thing for him.
So, yeah. So, Gerard Gallant, good luck to you, sir. I'm sure everything will work out all right.
Yeah, well, you're coaching the Islanders next year. Stop by the studio. We'll talk to you about everything. You can go on the record and talk about what you hated most about. But again, it is about analytics. Like, you do get, like, that's the reason he was, number one reason he was fired, is that he's not... Like you probably say the word analytics to him, and he's just like, what's the deal with chicks? How come we don't have any more chicks?
Exactly.
What am I looking at?
I should do this.
Oh.
Yeah? Wait, what do you think?
You wanna?
I could again, yeah. Anyways, forget it. Inside Puck Stoops up, please, gentlemen. Yeah. It's been kind of a weird day. So I wanted to talk about on the podcast today. First of all, we were just talking about Mike Mulberry, and since we've done that, we should probably... And I hate doing this because I'm extraordinarily prideful and arrogant. Offer an apology to NBC. We have said in previous editions of Puck Soup that NBC would never, in their right mind, put on Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid because, well, they're from Canadian teams and they've been very allergic to that. Well, it turns out that not only is a Toronto Maple Leafs versus Edmonton Oilers game on this week, okay? But for the first time since, I think it's 90, what is it, 94 maybe? Yeah, for the first time since 1994, the National Hockey League All-Star Game is going to be on the actual NBC. And not okay. NBCSN.
There has to be a reason. There has to be like, okay, like what was on NBC
Let me give you the quote. As the NHL celebrates its centennial, we are excited to bring the pace and energy of the NHL All-Star Game to a network television audience for the first time in more than a decade, said Sam Flood. This move, combined with Sam Before the Flood. Wait, Sam... What would be his Chris Berman nickname?
Sam Kurt Flood.
Sam Flood of Emotion. Sam Flood... Sam Flood Lights.
Sam Noah Flood. It's a thinker.
It's a real thinker. This move, combined with the addition of games featuring rising stars like Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, as well as our upcoming Star Sunday matchups, what the fuck is that, continues to illustrate our commitment to showcase the best talent in the NHL and grow the game of hockey in America. So, bold names, Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, in this quote, indicate that with those two guys in the All-Star game, plus the 3-on-3 format, which worked last year. By the way, just throw this in here for you. Last year's NHL All-Star Game, which took place in Nashville and was televised on NBCSN, was the network's most watched All-Star Game since the NHL broadcast rights were acquired in 2005-06. Nothing there about why. But the 3-on-3 format, obviously, is very exciting. And,
yeah, that's what it was.
And so 3-on-3, plus Austin, plus Connor, maybe Sid finds his way to this game in L.A., probably because of Centennial. And then on top of that, the Centennial shit. Like, all perfect storm of stuff. And NBC is putting the All-Star Game on its actual NBC.
But you're crediting NBC. So you started that off. I thought you were going to be like, three Winnipeg Jets games will be on in February. You're just crediting them for bolding their names in a press release.
That, yes, you know, I am.
How low must the bar be?
The bar is extraordinarily low.
Where that's low. Your... But that's why they're putting it on, because they saw the ratings for last year, and they said, we got to get those ratings on our regular.
And they think 3-on-3 is something they can sell, probably.
But, like, it's not going to be the same. It's not going to be as good.
Are you saying no one's going to carry off Austin Matthews on their shoulders after he was snubbed for the MVP and then inexplicably won the MVP?
Well, I also think that John Scott's not going to be there.
John Scott, by the way, has got a book coming out in December. I don't know if you knew that about his journey.
Is it just the game story from the All-Star game? Really? He's got a book coming out, huh? That's good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
It's good times.
Keep your eye on the votes. how to get to the All-Star game and not ever thank Greg Wyshynski and Jeff Merrick on any sort of public airwave.
I just hope that it's like one of those deals where it's like The Affair, where we're going to see everything from John's perspective.
What's that? Is that a TV show?
Yeah, it's one of those TV shows where like you see the story from the woman's perspective and you see the same story from the man's perspective. So I just hope it's like John Scott's version of it.
And like, it sounds like an SNL bit.
It's all like, you know, Gary Bettman walked in, he was, you know, slapping a lead pipe in his hand. He said, "One false move out of you in this All-Star game, Buster, and there goes your knee and your livelihood."
And then Gary Bettman's perspective is like, "Please, John, I want you to play in the game.
You seem like a nice man. We do like you. And bring your kids."
"We're not going to put Colin Campbell on the phone with you at any point to talk you out of this."
Colin Campbell got on the phone with me. I was nervous, and I heard in his voice a threat. "You go to this All-Star game, and it's curtains for your kids."
And then Colin Campbell's version is, "If you go to the All-Star game, it's curtains for your kids," because he doesn't care. He's just going to tell you, "I don't give a shit. I can't get fired from this job."
So good on NBC for putting that game on. That's all. Good for them for adding the All-Star game. Good for NBCSN for putting on Connor versus Austin. And hopefully, you know, hockey fans within the sound of our voices will listen. We'll watch those games so we can get more of them.
It was American Ninja Warrior, I think, that was out at the same time.
It was the finals of American Ninja Warrior. You're correct.
So I guess that show's off the air now.
Yes,
because good for them. No, whatever gets Brian Bickle on TV, that's all for me.
As you know, coming up in a few weeks is an amazing film, one that has already sold out tickets across New York City, even though it's weeks away from coming out. That's Rogue One, a Star Wars story, my friend.
What's that about?
So, remember how in the first Star Wars there was the Death Star?
Kinda.
Have you ever wondered how Princess Leia got the plans that she put inside of R2-D2 before him and C-3PO got on that thing and they landed up? No? Never?
I figured she just used her feminine wiles. She was just like, "Hey, Star Trooper.
Hello, ma'am."
What do you have over there?
Oh, nothing, ma'am. Plans for the Death Star.
Just, wow, this is a really firm armor suit you have on. Wow, is everything firm? And then, like, you know, she, like, knocks him out with an elbow and then takes that.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's pretty easy to knock out a stormtrooper with your elbow when they can be knocked out by rocks but thrown by teddy bears.
Apparently, a teddy bear just drops a little tiny rock out of a tree and the stormtrooper's knocked unconscious.
So Rogue One is the story of how the Rebels got the Death Star plans to then find out that the Empire had built it with a giant exhaust pipe that was just big enough for torpedoes to be fired into that led directly to the giant glowing red self-destruction switch apparently existed inside.
I would rather see the movie that where that guy, where, I want to see where they like interview the contractors to come in and build it, and this guy's like, "Well, yeah, the tailpipe, it does lead right to the self-destruct button, but it's more efficient and it's more energy
I
efficient."
Mean, seriously though, Mr. Emperor, you'd have to fly an X-Wing fighter right down this here trench to get there, and who's going to be able to do that with the propensity of fighters and gun turrets you got over here? Seriously.
Look, you have to, and the Darth Vader guy's got the Force, right? So he can just, like, force his way to move the planes out of the path, right? Can he do that?
Yeah, meanwhile, somewhere, Mike Rose in a construction, in the garbage disposal where they all were. Hey, what am I doing in here? Hey, what's that one-eyed thing?
Hey, you know, if I were you, I would take that long, convenient metal pole and just stick that on. I gotta tell you, like,
But you're telling me that's a floating robot with a syringe? And what am I supposed to do with it? Just play with it for a little bit, Mike. All right.
Yeah. It's pretty weird how the water doesn't seem very deep at all, and then for some reason when Luke gets pulled under, it's like 44 feet deep. I don't know how that works.
Hey, shut them all down. By the way, I don't know if we ever talked about this on the show, but do you realize that the entire Star Wars trilogy would have never happened were it not for the actions of one man?
And that man is?
That man is the guy on the Imperial Star Destroyer who told his gunner not to blow up the escape pod because there are no life forms on it.
Right. Don't waste the bullet.
Don't waste the bullet.
Or space bullet.
Which, again, you know, when you're fascists, you're apparently very economically cognizant of the cost of laser beams?
I mean, like, when you're just flying around the galaxy and murdering people on all these planets, like, you may need that bullet for some sort of, like, give me a planet. Give me a Star Wars planet.
Oh, you mean, like, Dagobah or Bespin?
Tatooine North. Is that a place?
that's a New Jersey town.
West Dagobah, off exit 122 on the parkway. Like, you may need that bullet for somebody from that planet. That's fair.
But, like, that guy decides to blow up the escape pod. Goodbye Death Star plans. Goodbye R2-D2. Goodbye C-3PO. Hello Luke Skywalker, rummaging through the desert to pick up scraps of metal that fell from the sky. And that's it. No movie, no nothing.
I never really thought about that. Like I mean, that dude on the ship was aware of droids, right? He didn't, like, hypothesize, well, there could be droids
on it. Yeah, what the fuck? Like, everybody's got droids all over the place. Yeah. And he's like, well, there's no life forms on it.
Right.
I'm like, that's great.
Like, let's say in 2016, like, I stole some plans and, like, I threw it on, like, a zip disk and I threw it into, like, a thing and pushed it into, like, the river
right,
or something.
Right.
Should we blow that up? Nope, no life forms in there. Like, the data could be in there.
In the prequels, there were entire armies of robots that, like,
right,
were killing people.
Let's face it, Star Wars wasn't a good movie.
No, Star Wars is great, but that guy right there, like, you wanted the movie about the Death Star contractors. I want the movie about that guy just sitting back and drinking copious amounts of whiskey, knowing that his decision is what led to all of this, led to the downfall of the Empire, for God's sakes.
That would be a fun bit. It's like, all right, who we got next? We got Hugh Hefner. Oh, is he the guy that built the Death Star like a big giant penis? that guy's overcompensating. We can't have that floating through space. It's going to make us look bad to the rebels. It's going to make it seem like we're overcompensating ourselves. No. Next.
Next, please. Hello. Oh, who are you? I'm Bibi Galini. I'm a cosmetics designer, and I'd like to make the Death Star a compact. It opens up like a compact.
How are we going to fit everything in there? It's a compact. Get out of here. Next. Hey, Donald Trump. Hey, let me tell you. A lot of people tell me you should make it out of gold. Just a bright gold floating object, a lot of diamonds inside, you know, a good place where you can store your mail order brides, okay? Mail order brides, it's a warship. We're not doing that on this thing. Let me tell you, the generals tell me that I need to have a place for my brides.
Yo, dog, I took your Death Star, and I put some rims on it, boom. It's a better Death Star. In honor of Rogue One, a Star Wars story, I'm going to play a game with our good friend Dave Lozo.
Okay, what's the game?
It's called Rogue One, a Star Wars story. Maybe it would help if I read what I actually have here.
Staring at a piece of paper. You're talking. I thought you were reading.
Rogue One, a Star Wars story character, or Finnish hockey legend. Mm-hmm. So the names I'm about to give you are either a character from the new film in the Star Wars saga. Well, oh, wait. The saga is the main ones with the numbers and the text scroll, and this one is sort of an answer. So it's a Star Wars sidebar, or it's a Finnish hockey legend. Mm-hmm. Ready to roll?
All right. I don't know how I'm going to do this, but sure.
All right. Try your best. Bodhi Rook.
Bodhi Rook.
Bodhi Rook.
That was actually Patrick Swayze's nickname in Point Break.
It was a Point Break sequel in which they robbed a chess tournament.
Yeah. Like, they would wear the masks of, like, famous chess players. Bobby Fischer. Get the gold.
The ex-presidents are Garry Kasparov.
Oh, wait. Shit. Fuck. Fuck that up. I'm sorry.
Ex-presidents. They're probably presidents of their chess clubs. The president of the Russian Chess Federation. All right,
Bodhi Rook.
I'm gonna say Bodhi Rook was a Star Wars guy.
That's correct. He is in Rogue One. He is played by Riz Ahmed from the night of a show I didn't watch.
Oh, so you're telling me Rogue One's gonna be super awesome for the first hour,
mm-hmm.
and then the rest of it's gonna drag on for a long time, and you're gonna wish that everybody dies?
Yeah, just like The Force Awakens. Lennart Petrell.
Lennart Petrell.
Finnish hockey legend or Rogue One, a Star Wars story character?
I'm going to just think that you alternated at the start, and I'm going to go Finn.
Motherfucker. Lennart Petrell is, in fact, hockey. He played 95 games for the Edmonton Oilers, and you are correct.
It's too bad we didn't do this a year ago. You could have been like, Finn. Is Finn a Star Wars character? Or Finn? Wait. Both answers are correct. He's a Finn legend, and he's a Star Wars character. What's the deal?
Zal Dinez, Star Wars character or Finnish hockey legend. Sorry, Rogue One character. I don't want to confuse you by saying that this might have been a character in, like, Attack of the Clones.
Actually, he was in a deleted scene from Empire Strikes Back.
He's actually part of Star Wars Rebels on a Cartoon Network. Zal Dinez.
Like, that guy sounds like he could be, like, Italian or, like, Zal Dinez. I'll go Star Wars.
That's correct. I will tell you, though, Zal Dinez is actually a lady. She's a lady rebel X-Wing pilot in Rogue One. You are correct. So you're a 3-for-3 right now.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. She's a lady.
Riku Hall.
Riku Hall. That's actually where I took a lot of my classes at Rutgers. I had a couple classes on Livingston campus at Riku Hall, where I learned to do the Riku, which is an ancient dance. No, I'm going to say Star Wars.
The answer, of course, is hockey. Riku Hall played 92 games for the Colorado Avalanche.
We're definitely stretching. Well, you're definitely stretching the word legend.
Now, that is not true. You are, again, like, when I tell you that Lennart Petrell played 95 games for the Oilers, Riku Hall played 92 games for the Colorado Avalanche, you are basing that opinion solely on their legend in the National Hockey League. Back in Finland.
No one knows who they are.
They are.
They run like delis and like they're just like, it's like Riku the deli guy.
Timo, where are you going? It's Riku Hall Day. We're off of school.
Down to Riku Hall, listening to the Finns of change.
Riku Hall actually is the Finnish Arsenio Hall.
Instead of woof, 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 he just says...
Bork. Wait, yeah. That's Swedish.
What's the Finnish thing? What's the stereotypical Finnish word?
Yerky, yerky, yerky.
Yerky, yerky, yerky. Yerky,
Baze Malbus. Rogue One, a Star Wars story character, a Finnish hockey legend.
Yeah, that's Star Wars because it has Mal in it. And, like, they want to make it. That's probably a bad guy. Bad person.
Well, it's not a... Well, I mean, it could be a bad person. It's the character played by Wen Jiang, or as I call him... please deliver us the Chinese box office, as we'll put this guy in all the commercials. Baze Malbus is a member of the Rogue One crew, I believe. So he is a bit of a ne'er-do-well, but not necessarily a villain.
That actually could be like a way you describe, like, you know, your girlfriend or your boyfriend. Like, you have to see Baze Malbus. It is huge.
Baze Malbus sounds like a very impressive part of the cell. What is that? The endoplasmic reticulum? No, the Baze Malbus.
Right at the Baze Malbus. You have a problem with your endocrinological...
That's right.
Baze Malbus. Could be a band, too.
Why don't you be Baze in the movie, no less?
Baze Malbus.
Risto Jallo.
Well, Risto is also a hockey guy. Risto Pekka Smoltz.
And Risto Ritsalainen.
That's a Finn.
That's definitely a Finn. He played hockey. He played 3 games for the Edmonton Oilers in 85-86. So once again, another Finnish hockey legend on the list.
How did you find these guys? Like, what did you do? Like,
so there's a site called Quant Hockey. I don't know if you've ever used it.
Yeah,
and you can search the highest scoring players by nationality. So there was 5 pages of Finns, and I just went to page 5.
Scroll all the way down. Baze Malbus. That's not a hockey guy, right?
That was Rogue One. All right, finally, UC Soros. UC Soros. Soros sounds like almost like Sauron, like
Lord of the Rings.
Like Lord of the Rings.
UC Soros.
Mm-hmm. Rogue One character or Finnish hockey legend.
It's also like what's her name? What's her name from the TV show with the mother and How You Met Her and Come on, Jessica. Tori.
What are you talking about?
Let's go to the mall. What's her name who sings Let's Go to the Mall and How I Met Your Mother?
Are you talking about Colby Smulders?
No, but like her character.
Robin
Sparkles.
Robin Sparkles.
Jesus
Christ.
That's obviously the Nashville Predators backup goaltender.
Obviously.
Everyone knows that.
Jesus. I got into it with some people this week about goal scoring in hockey.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Now, I am somebody who has grown tired of the idea that goals are the thing that you need to attract casual fans. Now, I know that...
They are.
But why are they? But when you say that they are, do you mean the exhilaration of goals being scored in a game, so games are like 6-5, mm-hmm. or do you mean
we need Connor McDavid to have 150 points and challenge Gretzky records to get the casual fan to care about Connor McDavid.
Eh, it's more the first thing, but the second thing's part of it. Like, I think the way I look at it is you and I, like, I think there's, like, levels of hockey people. Like, there's, like, people like you and I who watch all the teams. Like, you're a Devils fan, but, like, we're watching a ton of hockey. So, like, I do think we can appreciate the 2-1 game way more than the casual fan can.
And right.
I think the person who's a fan of, like, the Leafs or Nashville or whoever can also do that. They can also appreciate the 2-1 game as long as it's their team playing and winning the 2-1 game. Like, I don't think the Nashville fan really cares if Calgary beats Anaheim 2-1 in a well-played game. They're just going to see 2-1 and be like, eh, whatever. But if it's their team, great. But to get the casual fan... Like, I don't think it's, like, it's almost like, please don't like my sport when you're like, oh, you don't get that the 2-1 game is super. I saw a 2-0 Senators-Rangers game last night that was fucking terrible.
What do you, but what
Most
do you
of them were terrible.
But what do you say to, well, the Senators don't play
right,
a beautiful game.
Guy Boucher's, once they got that first goal in the second period, man, oh, man, you could just go to sleep in that building.
Oh, go ahead, stop playing now, people. Stop playing, guys.
Like Craig Anderson, you know, after shutouts, goalies always go, yeah, my team's blocked a lot of shots and kept pucks to the outside. He said it, and he was right. He was not bullshitting anybody after that.
But, like, game. But like, what do you, okay, that all said, what do you say to the person that says, but Americans are really digging on soccer now, and soccer ain't got no scoring?
Are they, though? Like, what's
the ratings are extraordinarily high for Premier League. They packed the stands for the America's Cup or whatever the fuck it was. Like, the people like soccer, and they ain't no scoring in soccer.
I hate to see those ratings to believe it. You know what I mean? Like, I just...
So what are you, a soccer truther? That's your response to this?
I've never... You're the first person I've ever heard talk about the high ratings of European soccer in the U.S.
It gets
like,
ratings.
How high? Give me a number. Give me a number.
Like, remember the finale of MASH?
Exactly that for Red
it's
Bull.
It's that, but then plus more.
I just... But, like, also, the other thing, too, is, like, soccer has always been that. Soccer has always been a 1-0, 2-1 at most sport most times, while hockey had a heyday of, like, you know, 7-5 games and stuff. And, like, in baseball, when, like, think about it. Like, think about baseball. They got to a point where they were like, yeah, we gotta lower the mound. Like, too many guys are awesome at pitching.
Right.
Like, that's how it is kind of now, where, like, too many goalies are awesome at making saves.
And that's...
So you make the nets bigger.
Okay, you make the nets bigger. You fundamentally change a part of the game...
Yeah.
Thereby making every record obsolete because the nets were smaller.
Like playing 3-on-3?
You know. That's at least got some semblance of hockey, not fundamentally changing the equipment.
Well, what about baseball? You know where like center field on Yankee Stadium was in like 1930 and where it is today? It's like 100 feet closer. Yeah. They bring stuff in. They lower the mounds. They change stuff.
I get that, but you...
It's fun.
You have to go farther than make the nets bigger to increase goal scoring. Because here's the thing that making the nets bigger doesn't account for. Block shots, obstruction, all of the things the teams do when it matters most. And that's my biggest problem with people that are always like, well, they should just change the game and we can market offense and every game will be 5-4 or whatever. When it comes to winning hockey games, the only way you win a hockey game is by preventing scoring. I know the Penguins were able to play a very high-tempo offensive game. That's great. They have some of the best offensive players on the fucking planet. And not everybody's going to be able to do that. It's the same principle as people are like, why can't you play Olympic-style hockey?
And those teams shouldn't win. The teams with the best players should win. Like the teams that have the Phil Kessels and the Sidney Crosbys and the Connor McDavids will benefit from the bigger nets because they don't need to have... Think about it. Like, imagine if... What are they, 6'4"? Imagine if they were 7'5".
So there you go. So you do want hockey to become baseball in the sense that only the teams that can afford to keep the best players around on their roster and nobody who's below the billion-dollar payroll of the Dodgers can compete because they don't get the same kind of players as the teams like the Penguins do.
Why would that fundamentally change?
Because you said the teams with the best players should play. I'm saying that you can play that style of hockey when you have Chris Letang, when you have Sidney Crosby, you have Evgeny Malkin, Phil Kessel, down the list.
Yeah, but like... I don't get what you're arguing.
Are you arguing
for the existence of...
I'm arguing it's like great that the Penguins can play that style of hockey, but not every team can.
But it's not really...
And because not every team can,
it's not a
essentially
style.
They're always going to go back to defense to win. And that's the issue with hockey. The issue with hockey, as far as the offense, is twofold. You have trouble marketing stars, as we talked about before, because they're not on the ice for two-thirds of the game. And when it matters, most teams will play defense. They will not try to score. They will prevent you from scoring and try to win 1-0.
But like the guys that always can break through that are the super skilled players. So they will be the ones least affected by it, and they'll be the ones doing the scoring more often.
Listen.
Like think about Ottawa last night. They played a 2-0 game. They scored early in the second period and just locked it down. The rest of that game, like there were some chances, but... the guys on Ottawa who normally, like when Mark Stone gets to the net or Carlson gets to the net, they're going to be more likely to score a goal because they're the guys that are harder to obstruct because they're better hockey players. You know what I mean?
Would you rather see the game played 4-on-4 than make the nets bigger? Because honestly, like this is the fundamental issue that I have with this debate all the time, which is that it's not about goal scoring; it's about flow. And you watched a life-ending Senators Rangers game that had no flow.
I've seen a lot of hockey this year. Like I've seen a lot of good games.
You can have a shitty 8-7 game if there's not back and forth action.
Yeah,
and so
a shitty 8-7 game.
4-4 is back and forth action, you know? That's the thing. And here's the thing. Like, if you really want to pump up the stats of someone like Connor or someone like Sid, doesn't need to help, but, like, any of these guys, here's my fast and easy solution. 2-minute major power plays.
Yeah, that's insane.
Why is it insane?
But wait, how is that not? You're talking about like making the nets bigger fundamentally changes the game. If you're going to let a team score as many goals as they can.
It used to be the case back in the day with the Montreal Canadiens. Now, where you should have pointed out my hypocrisy is railing against your idea of the teams with the best star players being the ones that get the benefit, when obviously the teams with the best star players are always going to be the ones that have a better power play.
Oh.
But my point is that if it's about goal scoring totals, I would rather see that. I'd rather see a lot of things before fucking around with the net. Maybe it's the goalie in me that's saying that. But like the idea that you're going to have these guys fundamentally relearn their position because you've decided to make the nets bigger, and in some cases leading to injuries, in some cases leading to everything. I mean, it's going to take a generation before guys figure out how to play with a larger net.
How's it going to lead to injuries? Having to stretch across?
Yeah.
Your groin's not going to go. Well, just think, to me, like, somebody wrote about this or tweeted about it or something, but, like, we do all these things where it's like, this guy's got to put his stick down in the face-off circle first. Now the face-off stays in deep if it gets deflected out of play and all this stuff. But at the end of the day, like, you watch hockey from 1984, the goalie's basically, like, he's basically dressed like a defenseman. Like his pads are so tiny that you could.
He's dressed like the child in that commercial that wraps paper towels around them so they can fall on their bum and not get hurt.
Right, like he's dressed like Ralphie from fucking Christmas Story. Like that's why you're gonna snipe so many goals in the 1980s because then there's so much more net to shoot at. Like now there isn't. So what do? You can't reduce the padding because guys have, you know, sticks made out of adamantium that are going to fire a 120 mile per hour slap shot from 40 feet away. So what do you do?
Well, clearly you need to find his brother Sabretooth to go after him.
Actually, if you were just to get rogue and have her touch some of the players and take their powers away, that would actually make the teams more balanced. I think
that's absolutely right. But if you get rogue, you're eventually going to get Gambit, and who the fuck wants that in the NHL?
But like again, you were talking about like casual fan, like I think the casual fan. Like, think about, imagine if baseball was always like that, where every game was 2-1. It takes away from, like, you want to see Madison Bumgarner and Clayton Kershaw
have
a duel. You don't want to go out there and see Bartolo Colon and, you know, friggin' the fit starter on the Padres do that. Like, it takes away from all the other good 2-1 games. Like, if they're all 2-1, they all meld together for people that aren't watching it super closely.
I've watched a lot of hockey. I think the hockey right now is pretty good. I think there's games that have flow. I think part of the problem, as we talked about in the show before, is that regular season matchups have no juice. There's no rivalry. There's no sense of hate. There's nothing that keeps your eyes glued other than the action. And I'm worried about the NHL going in this direction from a marketing perspective, which is to try to market stars and market offense and market this and market that, when one of the only things that's consistently sold through every era is hate, is rivalry, and things like that. So maybe you get that, maybe you don't. The other thing too about you know this sort of offensive era is, again, like we talked about before. Like there's so many guys that are in Canada. That's part of the issue too. Like the casual American fan might love Patrick Laine, they might love Connor McDavid, but the casual American fan is going to see Edmonton Oilers and Winnipeg Jets and run the other way. They just are. They care about sports. They care about the Flyers because they hate the Eagles. They care about the Kings because they hate everything LA.
But like that's to me that's the NHL's fault. You're saying like they've been marketing hate and stuff for years. Like the NHL hasn't been growing the way it should be because they're not doing things differently. They don't do things like the way other sports leagues do. Like if the Toronto Raptors are good and they're on TV playing against the Cavs, the Warriors, some team, like I feel like the NBA fan is way more likely to tune into that game than an NHL fan is willing to tune in to see the Leafs.
Yeah.
And I just think that's like something the NHL can tap into if they want. But, I mean, you heard Bill Daly. He's like, we love marketing teams. We think teams are the way to do it. record revenue.
It's an interesting time, but I mean, it's a good time. It's a blessing of riches, but it's an interesting time. And again, like, it's going to be really interesting to see if the catalyst for making the Nets bigger or fundamentally changing some of the rules in the game is McDavid and Matthews and Laine and all these guys that are now here, that they you know, knowing that they have an opportunity to sell these people to a casual fan if the numbers are super high and juiced up and stuff. It'll be interesting to see if that ends up being the catalyst for kind of like...
4-4 is... I wouldn't mind 400. I wouldn't be against that. If the NHL one day was like, we're going to just have 4...
How about no offside?
I've always wanted to do blue line in, red line out. You have to gain the blue and to get it out of the zone to relieve the pressure, you got to get it outside the red. I think that would... Think about like how many... It would just change where defensemen position themselves. There would be way less opportunities to just chip it out of the zone. Like, you'd be able to hold it in between the blue and the red and get it deep again and keep cycling. I think that would do a world of good.
I also think if you don't like my two-minute major idea, then they should adopt another thing that was tested at the R&D camp, which is you have to skate the puck out of the zone rather than just clear it. I love that idea.
Also, with the two-minute majors, like, let's say that happened tomorrow. You know what the referees would do.
Stop calling penalties. Well, it all depends on what the score is by the end of the game, because they all run a fucking script.
Or, like, how many penalties in a row they've called for one team or the other. And like, can you imagine if a team was down... if a team was down three with, like, a minute 30 to go, and they got a little, you know, over-the-glass penalty, and they got to score four goals in 90 seconds.
Yeah, right.
And go nuts.
And speaking of three, by the way, we are kind of talking around the elephant in the room, which is the three-point game. Like, if a regulation game was worth 3 points, that remedies a lot of this stuff, I think. It remedies teams playing super conservatively, because I think at least one team would be going and gunning for it to get that extra point in the standings. Yeah. Like, I think the three-point game is something that has a lot of support, never has enough support, because the NHL essentially games the system so everybody's, you know, within a point of each other getting into, like, the new year. But I think that remedies a lot of the problems that we have as far as game flow goes, especially towards the end of the game.
I think that would just be like another Band-Aid type thing, you know, where that's making the Nets bigger. I think that's the simple, obvious thing nobody wants to do.
All right.
That would work the best, but what do I know?
Before we get to listener mail, real quick, we're a quarter way into the season or just past it as you guys listen to this podcast. Who's your Hart Trophy guy? I'll give you mine. It's Carey Price.
Yeah, it's either Carey Price or Connor McDavid.
Yeah, it's a two-horse race there, and I think Price gets it only because, and no offense to Connor, like, we've seen the giant smoldering dumpster fire that is the Habs without Carey Price, and honestly,
it's unfair.
Any guy that can actually calm the conversation about firing Michel Therrien deserves some kind of award for the first quarter of the season. But Connor's definitely number two. That team is dog shit when he's not on the ice.
Yeah, it's a disaster. Yeah, I think I'd go Carey Price.
That said, Vezina Trophy right now, I'd probably go Devan Dubnyk over Price. I think Dubnyk is...
You're going to be one of those people.
He has faced just the same amount of shots.
Carey Price, that'd be Dubnyk Vezina.
He is playing... Yeah, why? Split it. He does not have the benefit of a man-mountain Shea Weber in front of him. He's playing on a Bruce Boudreau team, for God's sakes. He's got, like, a save percentage of north of, like, 960 at even strength. Dubnyk's my quarter-point Vezina winner now.
But if you're going to chop it, why don't you give it to Corey Crawford? He was a 996 or some crazy shit.
He would be number three on my ballot.
I would launch you out of the PHWA if you had Carey Price first at MVP and then second or third on the Vezina for some bizarre reason.
Well, luckily, I don't vote on the Vezina.
Clayton Kershaw for MVP. But he's fifth in my Cy Young ballot. Why? Check out my website. Baseball.
Well, you see, that's the beauty of it. Writer Greg voted Price in for the Hart, but GM Greg voted in Dubnyk for the Vezina.
Did you see the guy who voted Michigan ahead of Ohio State in his ballot?
What an asshole.
I kind of dig it.
Yeah, he figures.
They should have fucking...
Norris Trophy, Shea Weber, as much as I was trying to find a way to not give it to Shea Weber, the numbers are all there, the impact's all there. One of the greatest myths that we've seen in hockey, I think, is the idea that people were like, oh, this Shea Weber deal is going to be a bust immediately. Now, everybody knew he had a couple of years left in him. We just think in the long run, trading a generational talent like Subban for a guy like Weber who's going to seem real old in about 4 years is a bad trade eventually. But in the short term, it could have worked nice, and it has worked nice for him. Who you go with?
18 points in 22 games.
It's either him, Burns, Shattenkirk. Shattenkirk's been really good for them. For the Blues.
How about Ryan Suter?
Sure, why not? You can give it to Ryan.
I can give it to whoever I want. I'll give it to whoever I feel like giving it to. How about Brent Burns? How about just go with the obvious guy leading the league in points?
Good guy.
Brent Burns.
Dresses in camouflage a lot. Has a bunch of snakes in a drawer.
Good guy. Works hard. Loves the game.
Mm-hmm. Calder Trophy. Now, here's where things get fun.
What are you thinking? Carey Price.
Now, so here's how it's breaking down. The hipster Canadians probably are going to put Marner over Matthews. Everybody else who wants to vote for a forward is probably going to put Laine over both of them. But the guy who's getting the most support, I think, quarterway through the season is Zach Werenski. Because he's played over like 22 minutes a night. He's played quality minutes. His possession numbers are off the chart. But that would forget the guy who has started the year in his first 8 starts with a 7-1 record and a 1.75 goals against and a 939 save percentage. A guy who, for some reason, people feel like should be disqualified for being Rookie of the Year because he nearly won the Conn Smythe. A guy named Matt Murray. If another goalie had his numbers to start the season, people would be lauding him as the next great Canadian goaltender. But Matt Murray has the audacity to have been a known quantity before this season.
I'm going to give it to Brady Shea. I don't like it. Yeah, it's Patrick Laine. I do kind of like Zach Werenski.
Yeah, Werenski seems to be the pick that everybody likes because all the Leafs forwards and Laine are going to get a lot of support, and then Werenski might be able to slip in and get. Hey, you feel like you should throw the Blue Jackets a bone of some sort for that start, right?
He's like Gostisbehere if Gostisbehere started the year in day one.
Right. If Gostisbehere could play like a defense, he'd be Werenski.
What?
No. Oh shit! I'm sorry. That was out loud, wasn't it?
If all right, picture it like this.
Yeah.
All right. Imagine if Shane Gostisbehere was partnered with anybody besides Andrew McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He'd be so much better.
He'd be a lot better.
Now picture this podcast if you replaced me with Andrew McDonald. You'd be dead. You'd have no one to play off of, no one to laugh at your Star Wars references. He'd just be sitting here just like, I got a big contract. And I don't know, I'll just stand here and block some shots as I play on my own end the whole time. And you're going to be like, I want to get out of my own zone.
So,
get out.
So, Andrew, tell me about life on the road.
In the AHL, we take a bus. In the NHL, sometimes you take planes.
The stipend's not as good, but, you know, it's okay because I'm getting my full NHL salary.
Do you know anybody on the Islanders? I miss them.
Shane Gosso, you're one of those guys that was like good scratch Shane Gosso.
Oh, I know. Well... I was good to scratch Shane Gostisbehere because I think that it was a smart tactical decision by by Hakstol because it was a good wake up call. He's a good guy to kind of target. I know Flyers fans lost their minds. You're like, we're going to lose a game. It's not about that. It's about making an example of somebody early in the season and hoping that it pays off. And I like Hakstol a lot. I think I'm a big fan of his. Like, I think he's got some stones. And I love the fact that he walked into that situation last year where you had everybody on that Flyers roster being like, college guy. And like he managed
to get your diploma out of here.
Yeah.
Nerd.
What are you going to do? Coach with your protractor? and so he managed to make it work, and it was great. It worked out really nice for him. So I'm a Hakstol fan. So I like the scratch. I thought it was a smart decision.
It was stupid and just a complete ploy because just to do a thing. They won that game like 6-3, right? Whoever they played that day won.
Yeah, inspired by his scratching.
Yeah.
Reader mail time here on Puck Soup.
Eric Vanderkamp
and Eric Van Slembroek wants to know. Better chance to make the playoffs after a brutal start. The Red Wings or the Sabres? Sabres obviously get Eichel back. Red Wings getting better than expected goaltending from Jimmy Howard, and Mrazek is going to probably round into form. I don't think either of them make the playoffs. I think the streak ends the season for the Red Wings. But of the two, I still think Detroit is probably the better pick to eke in if I had to pick one.
Yeah.
I think the Buffalo's just like Buffalo's got a lot of holes in that team that need to be addressed, I think.
Although, I feel like people have been kind of pooping all over Jack Eichel first 20 games. Like, he's not Connor McDavid. He's not all.
Oh, he's going to come back with a ferocity.
Come back and he just fucking lights everybody
up. An unprecedented ferocity.
They just go on an 8-game winning streak. And, like, not for nothing. They're 6 points behind the Devils for the last wild card spot.
Mm-hmm.
3 points behind Detroit with a game in hand.
This is on. We're taping Monday, by the way.
Oh yeah, yeah. We have no. What day are we doing this? Whatever day this is, just pretend it's Monday. Go back in time. Yeah, I. You know what? It's 11, 12, 9, 10, 17. There's no real home away. Detroit. I think Detroit stinks, but no. Fuck it. Buffalo.
There you go.
There it is.
Friend of Buffalo, Dave Lozo.
Buffalo will finish with more points than Detroit. I'll just say that.
James Tomlinson wants to know, what are the best Christmas traditions? For me, it's watching Santa Claus versus the Martians on MST3K. I do that every Christmas. As I mentioned in the SeatGeek ad recently, I always like stocking stuffers. Big fan of stocking stuffers. I feel like presents are whatever. Like, you can look at a present and kind of know what you're getting, maybe by the shape of the box. But you stick your head in that hand, that stocking, you don't know what you're going to find. Lottery tickets, dildo, Hershey's Kisses.
A dildo would make a shape in the stocking. That's a good one. It's not one of those bullshit dildos. Depends.
Well, we buy Magnum stockings. So, I mean, like, the shape is obscured.
Like, if it's like a little rabbit, then you're not going to know. But if it's like a good old-fashioned, like, concrete dildo.
Yeah, if it's like a Jim Brown All-American kind of dildo, like, you'd know what it is.
Mine's the New Mexico Bowl. Great game between New Mexico and some other
teams. What was your favorite, what was your favorite shitty bowl name of all time? I got two.
There's a current one that has beef in it. It's like some sort of like beef bowl. The Bailey's beef bowl.
You mean the Beef O'Brady's bowl?
That Beef O'Brady's
bowl. Yeah, there used to be a Beef O'Brady's in Virginia when I lived there, and it was like the shit. Maybe they'll sponsor. It was not my favorite sports bar. Yeah, I won't say it was a shitty one.
Rutgers might have played in that bowl.
Yeah, I think they definitely played in that bowl. I was definitely the furniture guy. Any bowl sponsored by a business that may no longer be around. The furnituregallery.com bowl, and there was actually a pets.com bowl.
I remember the pets.com bowl. The insight.com bowl. And it used to be the insight bowl, then it became the insight.com bowl.
God.
Rutgers also played in that one.
Like, what? Why would you, like, anybody's going to throw you money? Be like, the Chico's Bail Bonds bowl.
teams apparently lose money on some of these bowls. Like, some of them turn down the shitty bowls that are, like, on December 10th or whatever.
Yeah,
college football's stupid.
Thanks to Rutgers for making Maryland bowl eligible, by the way. That's pretty strong play.
What a bad season.
Steve wants to know...
Basketball team 6-0 as of Monday.
Steve wants to know, what's your favorite hockey moment as a fan for each of your favorite teams? Mine is Gagne Game 7 versus the Bruins. My favorite moment as a Devils fan is always and forever going to be Johnny Mac scoring against Darren Pang in 1988 and putting the Devils in the playoffs the first time. I was 2 years into my cognizant phase as a sports fan when that happened, and it then sent me on an amazing journey as a Devils fan through a playoff that included two of the most brutal series, violence-wise, I've ever seen, against the Capitals and against the Islanders, and then a Boston series that was the infamous Have Another Donut series. What an amazing impression that left on me as a young lad, that playoff run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go when I got Scott Pellerin's autograph in a program that let me go do Squirro.
Oh. What?
I've done Squirro 4 times.
Shut the fuck up. Did we ever talk about this?
1 time I got the autograph. 3 times I was an alternate because they didn't sell the program.
Oh, that's right. You were down. You went into, like, the reserve area. I think we did talk about this, actually.
If you had the program, you had the program. But if you didn't have the program, you can go downstairs in the arena where they sell, like, all the tickets in the main ticket area. There would always be somebody there. And if you got down there with, like, 5 minutes to go in the period and you were the first person to sign up and they only sold 3 of the 4 programs, you go back down after the second period and you wait and see. And then they were like, Dave, yeah, like, well, come on, you get to do it. But Scott Pellerin was the one time I got to do it, and I got to do it at an Islander-Devil game, sellout crowd. And that was the time I came the closest to scoring. 8 times I hit the net. Never missed the net once. But the Islander game, I got it into the – I got it in there, but it didn't cross the line completely.
What you talk about traditions that I love –
Saturday.
The emphatic booing of people in Squirro that missed the net completely is one of my favorite traditions of all time.
They fucking this is how it happened. I was like 13 maybe, something like that, and like I knew how to play hockey, so I knew how to just guide the puck towards the net, and I just didn't get enough on it, but I thought it went in because the light came on, the crowd behind the net stood up. I may have had my first orgasm at that point in my life. I put my arms in the air, and the Devil's fucking mascot skates over to the crease, bends down, puts his hands on his knees, bends a little bit, looks, and he waved it off. The fucking mascot waved off my goal, my chance to come back in game 82 and play for the car.
Did you get in his face afterwards? Or were you just demoralized at that point?
The crowd started booing me. I think I may have given the middle finger to somebody on the way off the ice. And the worst part too is like when you're walking back to your seat, you have the stick from the ice, so everyone knows who you are, and they were like, "Nice try, buddy." Fuck you, buddy.
Finally, Dan Straight Edge, cheers, wants to know, if you could kill any cartoon character for realsies, who's going to die? If you could kill any cartoon character for realsies. Now, I imagine this means, like...
Are you okay, Dan?
If you met a cartoon character in real life vis-a-vis Roger Rabbit, or does he mean, like, you have a giant magic eraser vis-a-vis Duck Amuck, and you can, like, erase them from a cartoon?
I have never contemplated cartoon character murder before.
I've contemplated cartoon character sex before. Hello, Jessica Rabbit. Well, but I'm not...
I actually have a picture of me and Jessica Rabbit when I went to Disney when I was like 10. It's like one of those ones where you stand there.
Wait a second. Yeah. Like a woman dressed like Jessica Rabbit?
No. It's like you know how you...
Oh, like a cardboard thing? Or
no, it was a computer generated. Okay. Yeah. And it's just like her giant breasts and my 12-year-old face. Can't figure out why I am like the way I am today.
Oh, so the squirrel was the second time you came.
I don't know why I didn't put more on that shot. Like every other shot I took slammed off the board. It just didn't go in. And that one just they should have fucking zambonied the ice first, and I would have won a car when I was... Whatever, I'm fine.
I'm trying to think of my least favorite character from The Simpsons. Like someone who I never felt was funny.
I'm trying to think of the cartoons I watch that I don't like the characters. Maybe Cyril from Archer. He's annoying,
yeah. I mean, if you're going classic, I mean, I would probably kill Huckleberry Hound. Because why do you need Huckleberry Hound in our lives? Like, what does he even do?
Never liked Mr. Magoo. Sensitive to blind people.
That's such an easy... Like, if this was the most dangerous game, like, that'd be the easiest mark to kill.
He's Mr. Magoo. He would walk out of the way as my bullet was coming there.
You could stand right in front of him and, like, split his head with an axe, and he would be like, "What are you doing there, sonny?"
Dude, I'm trying to think of old-timey cartoons. Who are the bad guys in the Thundercats? There's probably, like...
You mean Mum-Ra?
Oh, it was like that, yeah, that thing that wore the mask.
Oh, now you're bringing me over to that area.
Like Skeletor?
I would probably kill...
Who was She-Ra's bad guy?
I would probably kill Flint from G.I. Joe, because I was more of a Duke guy.
Oh, right, G.I. Joe.
And then I would definitely kill...
Is Jar Jar Binks a cartoon character? I think I might have found it.
I would kill... Evil Lynn from He-Man. Never had any use for her.
Zoidberg, maybe?
Zoidberg is a good one. I'm trying to think on The Simpsons who I'd kill, and I can't think of, like, a character that I did not like on that show.
What about...
Krusty the Clown.
Yeah, Krusty's hilarious.
Yeah, he is.
Krusty's greedy and takes advantage of people. I love him. He's great.
I'd probably kill Maggie the baby. Like, what's the sense of it?
I mean, Maggie did it. Didn't Maggie attempt murder?
Maggie was involved in the stupid Mr. Burns plot. She's super smart. There was that episode where she spoke and it was like Liz Taylor's voice.
I'd probably kill...
Maggie's been a lot of cheesy stuff. I would have infanticide. I would kill... Is that having sex with a baby or is that murdering a baby?
Infanticide?
Yeah.
I think that's murder.
Okay, I'll infanticide Maggie Simpson.
Otherwise, it'd be weird. No, I think I'd kill all the Animaniacs.
Oh my god!
You're assholes. Fuck off, Animaniacs.
Oh shit! Now you. Okay,
my Dot, wacko.
All right, Maggie Simpson. Congratulations, your life is spared. The one I want to kill is that girl on Tiny Toons that did the... I want to love him and squeeze him and hug him and blah, blah, blah.
I don't remember that.
It was a character on, like, either Tiny Toons or Animaniacs. It was, like, a little girl who would always find, like, the characters and then treat them like they were my little baby dolls or whatever.
Like, torture them.
Yeah. Right. Oh, fuck. Throw her in a fucking volcano tomorrow.
Yeah, she's got a bullet coming for her. she's torturing living technical living things.
This has gone on way too long, and by that I mean you guys have no idea of the technical difficulties you've had today.
Yeah, I can't wait to put the headphones on when we hit stop here to see how this sounds. I'm looking at the screen. Then we've had the audio screen, our levels in front of us the whole time. We never do that to see how it sounds. And yeah. I'm sitting far away from the sensitive mic, and Greg's on top of the mic.
Our screen looks like a cardiogram for like a newborn rabbit, and it's not a good look.
It's like a 78-year-old man with heart issues having a menage a trois to 21-year-old like, Playboy
playmates. With Margot Robbie and like.
Yeah, Margot didn't respond to my text on Monday night. It's
all right. Sad. So, anyways, thanks everybody for listening.
Tweet, not text.
And we actually know Puck Soup first week of December, back the following week because your boy's on honeymoon time in Hawaii.
Greg's gonna live a fantasy life for the next 2 weeks.
Yes, in Fantasy Island. And thanks for listening. You can find my stuff on Puck Daddy when I'm not on vacation. You can find my stuff on Twitter at Wyszynski. Which is, at Wyszynski. And you can buy my book for the holiday season, Take Your Eye Off the Puck. And if you save your receipt, if you buy this and save the receipt, I can promise you something might be coming your way. Save the receipt, though. And here's Dave Lozo to take you home.
Oh, I had a thing to take us home with. It's been such a traumatic day that I don't remember what it was. What was I going to talk about? What was fantasy football? I had a nice lady on the escalator today who moved over without anybody asking her. She's nice.
Was that you?
She's a Port Authority, and she got on the escalator, and she had, like, her bag on the right side of the home, on the escalator, and herself on the left side.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to say anything because she's kind of an old lady, but she just sat to the side. Very nice.
There you go.
I don't know. What's going on in the world? Is anything chapping your ass in the world?
Nothing.
Not
at all. Yeah.
Nothing.
There it is.
All right, well, then that's it, then.
Listen, we love you. We love you all. We thank you so much for listening. Leave positive reviews if you like it. If you don't like it, leave negative reviews. And that's the show for this week. Sorry if it was too loud or too quiet.
Bye!
Oh, God, no!
Now leaving Nerdist.com.